This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. In this show, we talk about value, the social and moral value of business. Each episode, each guest will bring me a little closer to finding out what does it profit. Last time, we talked with Garib Shamus, king of all things superhero. Inspired by our very own Vice President Kamala Harris, whose Read Aloud campaign and superhero book moved me to reach out to the man whose mission it is to build community among those who feel marginalized. Garib shared with us his beautiful philosophy that we are all a superhero at something. So true, so true. Now, those of you who are new, WDIP, or WDIP, is one in a long line of acronyms that show up on this show. Pay attention because this is one that you want to remember. Because at this point, on What Does It Profit, we're all about creating community. And you can't have community without interaction. In my approach to ethics, all this relates to the human value of contribution. Our human dignity demands that not only do we have the moral responsibility to contribute to our own development, but we also have a call on our lives to help others contribute. And just think about the contributive injustices that occur when we are marginalized, discriminated against, and just not included. This week on What Does It Profit? We're talking with the manager for diversity and inclusion at the Walt Disney Corporation, Logan Scott, whose work in Black History Month with the New York Times' own Nicole Hannah-Jones and writers from the New York Times and the New York Times Magazine in their 1619 project. They inspired us. We're so excited to have Logan with us today to talk about superheroes, inclusion, diversity, and what it all means for business. And now let's welcome to What Does It Profit? Logan Scott. Logan, how are you?
Hi, Dawn. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I just came in from the rain. Our studios are here in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C., and it's pouring down rain, and it's COVID time. But, you know, it was a kind of a beautiful thing in a way. The raindrops are what I'm talking about, but just like the community that I saw coming into the studio, people were handing out food to their neighbors. And, you know, we're in the midst of COVID time.
We really are. And I think because we are in the midst of COVID time and it's shocking everybody to a degree, some of us are really responding in a, in a compassionate way or in a more compassionate way, you know, which is good to see. I'm next door to you in McLean, Virginia. So we're experiencing the same weather as well.
Well, yeah. Let's tell our listeners where you sit in the Walt Disney Corporation. You said Northern Virginia. I don't think of the headquarters of the Walt Disney Company in Northern Virginia. How do you find yourself there?
That's right. Good question. I'm answering that a lot. I even introduce myself on calls because I'm so new to the company. I'm a few months in by giving my location first. And so obviously, you know, we have the Burbank office, the Glendale, California, and then we have Florida as well, Orlando people will think of. I landed at the Walt Disney Company in 2020 amid so many things that were going on. And I was actually recruited in the summer.
Yeah, you came from HR in some pretty impressive places. Tell our listeners a little bit of your backstory. But before you do, let's clarify the role that you have within the Walt Disney Corporation. You head up a diversity and inclusion practice group in the corporate segment of the Walt Disney Corporation. You have talent acquisition, right? Those are the ones I think of when I first kind of think of Walt Disney, you know, who's your favorite character? My kids asked me that when I told them I was going to be talking to you today. And I said, well, you know who it is. And my little one said, yes, Princess Aurora, Sleeping Beauty. So that one's my favorite. Do you have a favorite?
My favorite is actually Simba from The Lion King. I think he's
Hakuna Matata.
He's a lot of fun. He's genuine and he's courageous. And I just, I've always admired that character truly since I was a child.
Exactly. So I had to break the news to them. I said, that's not the part of Walt Disney we're talking to today. And they're like, oh.
Right. Yeah. You know, you have sort of, you know, the studio space, you have the parks space, you have, you know, other spaces, and then you have sort of this corporate space. And so that's the space that I work in. And that actually is with individuals who support varying parts of the company. So that, you know, there's the finance arm and there's the legal arm. And then there's, of course, the HR arm and within this corporate space. And so
Can I call you like the internal plumbing of the Disney Corporation? You guys are the infrastructure?
Oh, sure. Actually, I think that could work. I don't think that's a stretch. Yeah. So in that space, you know, I'm responsible for the diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy and executing on that strategy for those employee specific or cast members specific to the corporate segment.
Got it. But then I guess you have partners in other segments of the company who have a diversity and inclusion role in their
Absolutely.
Space?
Absolutely. Yes. So there's a team in the as I say, in the studio space that kind of do what I do, right? But only for studios. Yeah. So, which is good. We need that, right? They can't possibly be just one team for a company.
Oh, you mean, Logan, you can't handle, wrestle up some of those superheroes that you've got on your exactly.
Some of them, Iron Man and company, and see if they can help me, you know. But no, there are multiple teams, which is good, you know, because we're all trying to move the ship, you know. As
oh, don't get me going on metaphors, because I think of Disney cruise ships, but we're not going there either.
Right. Oh my goodness, yeah, I set myself up for that one. We do need multiple DE&I practitioners. Yeah.
So tell our listeners what DE&I mean.
Absolutely.
We have acronyms all over our show. So I always have to step back and remind our listeners that, yes, here's another one we're going to tell you about. So what does that mean?
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm glad you asked. So the D stands for diversity. I define diversity as the who, right? So who you are, the differences and the similarities that make us who we are. And the E stands for equity, which recognizes that people, in some cases, and this is broadly speaking, right, not even necessary to the company, but in society, right, each person or people have different circumstances, and that there should be allocations that exact resources and opportunities needed to reach an equal outcome. And then there's, of course, inclusion, which is sort of about the what. It's the actions that we take to make others feel welcomed, valued, appreciated, and heard.
That's enormous. I think I saw somewhere on your website, actually, it was a wonderful statement about diversity and inclusion. It was your commitment. And can I read some of it back to you? You probably know this by heart, but here we go. Stories are better when the storytellers represent the vast experiences of the people who hear them. At Disney, we have an opportunity and a responsibility to create authentic, unforgettable stories, experiences, and products that capture the imagination of generations of people around the world. We are committed to doing so in a way that counts everybody in. And I love the everybody in part, because you are at a part of the company that's, you know, supporting the infrastructure that is the seed of the culture change in any organization, I think comes from HR. Would you say that that is partly true?
Partly. And I've learned that, you know, I've worked at a few different employers, and I would say HR plays a significant role in that. And so do the leaders. You know,
right.
And leaders having a relationship, an ongoing kind of transparent relationship with HR, because those are culture champions.
Well, it sounds like you've been doing this for a while before you got to Disney. Tell us a little bit of your backstory.
I started my first big kid job, as I call it, in a sales and service role with CEB.
Wait a minute, who's CEB?
I was just about to say that, which is formerly known as the Corporate Executive Board.
Okay, yeah, that's really important. Tell everybody what the Corporate Executive Board is.
Yeah, well, okay, so the Corporate Executive Board was an organization that was developed and worked with companies based on membership. So companies open up a membership with the Corporate Executive Board, CEB, for specific services, resources, webinars, and those types of things. The clients, the member clients that we worked directly with were C-suite individuals. And for example, right, Colgate in New York, I think they were based in New York, you know, Barnes & Noble, right, these kinds of organizations that needed a very specific support. And the practice that I worked in was the legal practice. Now, I know very little about the law, right? I wasn't practicing or anything, but my role there as an account manager was to maintain the relationships that CEB had with that member client, for example, Colgate, right? Making sure that they were getting their, you know, proper service and that they were just getting the attention that they needed. I was grateful for that job.
Can I stop you there? Because you kind of opened the door. You said, you know, you weren't in a legal capacity, which I think is an important distinction because I look sometimes at ethics as a question of following the rules, which is all the legal stuff, and then kind of following the kind of moral code or culture of the organization, which is something else. It's not really about rules. I mean, some of it's rules per se, because the government tells us what we should and shouldn't be doing, but so does our conscience. And so I think that's interesting. And one of our listeners got wind that we were going to be having this conversation and said, you know, there's a proposal at Disney where they'd actually thinking about putting an employee from the company on the board of directors. And I just laughed. I said, yeah, that's an effort at all, you know, a handful of big corporations. And they said, well, we'll see where that takes us at Disney. And I said, I think the entire corporate world is looking at how that kind of engagement with their employees and the board and the shareholders, all that stuff is going on. But it's happening at your company, too.
It is. That is. Yeah, that's true. I think we're in such a movement right now, you know, for those types of things.
Yeah. So you guys are building this culture inside the company. So I kind of see it as the seed that's kind of being put out there within the Disney culture. This is something, in my view, that takes careers and generations of careers sometimes to like move the, again, this is a cruise line analogy, like move the cruise ship in another direction. Okay. So I interrupted the story. So you're at the corporate executive board. And then what happened in your career trajectory?
Yeah. So in my time there, was there for just about a year and realized that, you know, while I was pretty good at sales, you know, it didn't necessarily make me super happy all the time. And so I decided to, you know, take a risk and go somewhere else. And I left that company without anything to go to.
That's brave. That's superhero like. Remember, we had Garib Shamus on last week, and you know this kind of theme of superheroes. So you took a bold move.
I did.
Job, jump ship.
I don't think I'll ever do it again. I don't regret that though, Dawn. I'm glad I did it when I did. I stood by it, and I knew that I wanted to do something else, and was very grateful for the company and what it taught me early on. As I said, it was my first job in corporate America. It taught me a lot, and I understood, you know, what the difference was, and like something that you are good at versus something that you enjoy to do, right?
The
latter is a strength. And landed at a retailer, worked for a German retailer, grocery retailer, for about 3 years following my time at Corporate Executive Board, CEB. And I was there in an HR capacity, worked as an HR administrator, which was more of sort of a generalist role. I was able to test the waters with varying functions of HR. So talent acquisition, benefits, talent management, those types of things. And then eventually there was a position for diversity, equity, inclusion specialist that I was promoted into. And then also my time there was promoted again and worked in DE&I, but also employee engagement and retention as well.
All right, Logan. So you're at Lidl, this German transplant to the deep south, which seems a little weird. But anyway, you went on to a name that we probably all are pretty familiar with, Deloitte. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing over there.
Absolutely, yes. So in my role at Deloitte, I was a consultant in the human capital space. And I think one of the things, and I said this in my interview with the firm, was that the blessing in going into a firm like that, and specifically in federal consulting, not commercial, was for me to serve my country. I worked with departments and agencies and only the offices of human resources within a certain department. But it was the intersection again of like my HR acumen and skills and service to this country. And I learned so much about just the makeup of the United States because I worked with, you know, Department of Agriculture. I worked with education. I worked in the federal health sector. director as well. And it just made me grateful. There were also times where I was just also realizing just how complicated things can be in the States.
But Logan, again, that is an understatement these last few years. It probably served you well during COVID times.
Truly, it did. It did. And I, you know, sit here today virtually with you, proud, spirited, I should say, less proud, but more spirited, alumnus of Deloitte. And that when you leave, you know, you're called a colleague for life and you join an alumni network and things. And it's an organization I look fondly on because it did give me sort of the consulting wings that actually helped me do my job today. And I think better than I would had I not had a couple years of consulting.
Yeah, Logan, I totally get it because we have the J.P. Morgan Alumni Association, and it's like it's kind of like your college where you're affiliated with it. There's this sense of community and, you know, it's all a very good thing. One part of your story I think is important for our listeners to know. So your background is like in the social sciences. So you really studied people, right? You studied sociology. But then you had a moment where you're like, sociology isn't giving me enough. Tell our listeners a little bit about that journey.
So, yeah, my bachelor's is in sociology, and I also danced too in college as well. So, you know, undergrad was a liberal arts experience. I loved it.
Let me stop you, Logan. Let me stop you because our listeners can't see you, but I can see you. And I've got my hands shaking up because in my finance class, we call them mojo songs. They're like songs that get you going. So you talk about being a dancer. Do you have a mojo song?
Oh, goodness.
I won't put you on the spot.
You know, no, that's fine. I mean, that is something to think about. You know, off the top of my head, I don't think so.
Probably in the moment. Hakuna Matata. It's a wonderful thing.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's a kind of a feel-good song.
Yeah, that's really what I mean. Yeah.
I think about something that would like kind of get me kind of amped for like a workout or something that I would be kind of dancing around to.
And Simba doesn't do it for you?
Maybe not for that. But really, honestly, I'd probably say anything, any up-tempo by Mariah Carey. And all of my friends and family members, I'm a huge MC fan. So I would say anything, any up-tempo by her would probably do it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's dial back down the serious part. So I interrupted you when I heard you were a dancer. Let's talk about this kind of liberal arts background. And actually, it kind of, to me, makes sense that you end up right now at a place like Disney because it's a creative vibe that's imbued. And even if you're not in the creative side, I think it just draws people who have that kind of energy. I don't know all of your colleagues, but I get that from you.
I understand. Studied people and just social interactions and really wanted to understand them, you know. And when I was thinking my senior year in college, you know, what I was going to do and where I would go next, I said, you know, I am interested in business, but I know there's so much about business that I don't want to do. Like, what about business? Where could I see Logan working in business and America.
Yeah, Logan, I'm going to prompt you a little bit. I mean, think when you answer that question about, you know, what was the community like that you grew up in? I mean, what were some of the institutions that were important in that community? Because I like to talk to our guests about what were those things that kind of motivate or inform the way you view the world?
Yeah.
And how did that kind of help in your decision on what to do?
Sure. So I'll share my personal motto, which is I believe that I best uplift society through serving others. I grew up in Boy Scouts. I was always in class office. I was senior class president. I was really active in college. I was a president's aide as well. So I've always found myself by choice or nomination in a role where I was serving others and working with leaders in a consulting capacity. Right. So that's been ingrained, you know, from the time I was probably in intermediate school, middle school, and growing up. And so to what I was saying about growing up in my last year of college and thinking about corporate America and where I could see myself, right, and having the anchor and understanding that I see myself as a servant to others, HR seemed like a very natural fit. And because I had a sociology degree, I thought, okay, well, maybe I should equip myself at the very least with a business degree before I just kind of dive in so I have some acumen. And when I was looking at programs, I came across a program, MSB program.
Now tell everybody what MSB is.
Yeah, I was going to say a Master of Science in Business.
There you go, which program. Is like a business degree for social science background.
Yes, I was just going to say it's the perfect business degree for those of us who have sort of that soft science or social liberal arts background and are looking to complement it with a business degree so that when you do go into the business space, the corporate space, if you choose to do so, right, you do have that that degree and all that came along with it, acquiring the degree to stand on. And so that's what I was fortunate enough to have. And I was glad that I did that. You know, I chose that program not because of the for the business degree, but that was really kind of second, right? The first was, and I think we've touched on this before, was the intersection of infusing faith in a discipline that is often not inclusive of that, or at least when people hear it, that doesn't register, right? Like the idea of faith in business. And so that was something that really fascinated me. And I remember writing my personal statement and highlighting that because that was significant to me.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me because I think that when we think about the kinds of values that we engage with in the world, the positive values and, you know, some of the negative ones we have to deal with, you know, the idea of the value of service is just so universal. It almost doesn't matter what faith tradition you come from, but knowing that those values kind of equate to virtues that you can think of in like a religious sense. Think about the kind of the way we express our kind of deep convictions that come from, in my experience, my personal faith. And it sounds like it, for you, there may be some of that, but there's also this, you know, element of service, which I think also operates from what I understand in your world in tandem. So it's like this nice package. And it's like, how do you deliver that when you come to the office? And so I get a sense that you were looking for that when you were thinking about, you know, working in the diversity space.
Yes, I see. Yeah. Fortunately, my upbringing, and again, you know, the friendships that I have are made up of such dimensions of diversity that I often find myself thinking about certain, you know, situations. I would say, you know, outside of the norm. For example, you know, I have relatives on my mom's side of the family who are little people, right? We don't use the term dwarf anymore, but they have shorter limbs, you know. So going to the grocery store for them growing up was a completely different experience than for you or for me, right? So thinking about DE&I in that space, diversity, equity, inclusion in that space, and really starting to understand from an earlier point, what equity is, right? It's what I said, which is the allocation of resources, right? So if you get a stepping stool so that you have the same access to the cookies or the pasta on the top shelf, and I don't, but I can already reach for it for myself with my privilege, which is unearned set of advantages, right? There's nothing wrong with that. You know, and so getting people to see that, and because I feel so passionate about that space, right, that is my the idea of serving says I get to do those types of things on behalf of other people who have their own layers and dimensions of diversity and cannot raise their hands.
Oh, Logan, you know, that is such a beautiful thing that you've just expressed. You know, I'm a mom of two children that have learning disabilities, and so they have had a lifetime of thinking about what kinds of accommodations are necessary. So just as you express, you know, that allow them to contribute to the extent that it's their greatest gift. So I'm with you, and I'm so glad you've shared that sentiment with our audience. I have not shared much of that story on our show, but I've been on other shows talking about it. So it's nice to have you with us today so that you can share in the corporate space how that gets actualized.
Yes, yes, yeah. So, and it is through, you know, business case building. As I said, you know, I've been with a couple of different employers, but it's also a piece of sharing, you know, the personal anecdotes, you know, that really can get people to see, because you do want to tap into the heart. You want to personalize stories as much as you can when you're telling stories and be a business case still, right? You know, one of the things I've said is that the greatest benefactors to diversity, equity, and inclusion have been white women. Right. When we think about who is typically in boardrooms in any company, right, we could just take the Fortune 500 as an example. Right.
Right.
And when you start to tell stories in this space, because you are typically looking at a room filled with white men, straight white men, some of them, many of them have wives, daughters, sisters, granddaughters. Right. And so the appeal there in some cases is to say, we want things to be better. Right. Wouldn't you want, you know, your daughter or your niece, or just as an example, right?
Right,
of building
right.
empathy and the connections, right? And so you do start to see that over time. Because, you know, people are, you know, they have a conscience. And one of my other sayings is I believe in a person's best. And I think sometimes when you tap into the place that matters the most, between these two, oh, sorry, you can't see my heart, you know, people start to get it. You know, you start to, the light bulb starts to go off.
Logan, I did it myself just last week. The What Does It Profit podcast moved into our first official production space that's all our own. And I was painting the walls. We'll see some of these pictures later on Instagram. They're mildly funny. But I was at the Sherwin-Williams store and I was talking to the cashier. It was the end of the day. They're about ready to close up. And I just needed to paint a very small office. So there was a great employee there who was getting ready to help me, and he was trying to, you know, do his best. And I said, you know, if you were giving advice to your sister, what would you tell her to do? And again, it's to me, it's what you just said. It's like, you know, then it's like the barriers broke down. He's like, I love my sister. And he's like, this is what I would tell her to do. And it totally framed the conversation in a different way. And I'm getting the sense that that's really what you're talking about.
Precisely.
Yeah. Okay. I want to go to a little bit of your day-to-day job as the manager of the corporate segment of the Walt Disney Corporation. I want to know what these business employee resource groups are. What's that all about?
Yeah. But they exist for people who want to support certain dimensions of diversity. So, for example, you know, you might have persons or for differently abled, but I tend to call them differently abled people. And so these people may not have a disability themselves, or they may have a disability themselves, or they may be perfectly abled, right, but have a significant other or a child who have, you know, a certain disability. And so they come together and they host different events, and they just develop a greater sense of community within, you know, a really big company. And it's nice because, yes, it brings people together, but it brings people together for a common interest.
Oh, you know, Logan, I get it. It's like the moms in the school system that I'm talking about with my children. It's like we have this immediate camaraderie with each other because we have this shared experience.
Yes. Yeah. That is what it's about. You know, it is, you know, the shared interest or the shared experience, and then wanting to do something, wanting to socialize, mobilize something around that through, you know, event planning and those types of things, programming and those types.
Creating a culture of diversity and inclusion within a, well, first off, on a personal level, what does it profit? How does it profit you? How does it profit your soul, the work that you do? And then I'm going to ask you the same question of the corporation. So let's start with you. What does it profit to do the work that you're doing?
Oh, goodness. It profits on a level that's so much more than Logan Scott. It goes back to, you know, what I was saying and how I see myself as a servant and thinking, looking at life and listening, right, with a lens and an ear that is an inclusive mindset, you know, so it profits me because I frankly become a better person through the work that I do.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And that's a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a gift to yourself, but it's a gift to everyone else in your world. And so let me ask it another way. Creating this culture of diversity and inclusion in the Walt Disney Corporation, what does it profit? Meaning, what does it profit the common good? We were talking about Disney being this enormous piece of, you know, world culture. You know, when Walt Disney does better, how does it, and again, that's a process ongoing, but what does it profit?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's twofold. It profits, you know, internally for the organization, for the corporation, and then there's the external as well. You know, I think There's a huge competitive advantage to diversity, equity, and inclusion. And yeah, I mean, it's no longer a question of, is this the right thing to do? Of course it is. And it's also the smart thing to do, right?
Yeah, tell us why it's smart, why it's a differentiator, why being right on these issues or getting better on these issues or continuing to work and try to, what does that profit? You know, why is that a good thing?
Yeah. So, and I think this is true, you know, for any industry, right?
Like right.
To bring in, you know, you to an organization, to bring me into an organization, right? Like bringing you in, bringing us in, right? But also developing the talent, mentoring, sponsoring, right? The talent that comes into the company, right? But it also builds on retention. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people, you can have all the diversity in the world, right? But without inclusion, it falls apart. So that's the piece about, you know, the culture building, right? And so where does that come in? It impacts your bottom line. It costs companies thousands of dollars every time an employee leaves an organization. And if the reasons behind leaving an organization is related to a lack of inclusive culture, well, then there's work to do, right? And something that I've learned about human resources is that people tend to leave a company for two reasons, money or management. And by management, they mean people. And by people, they mean culture, right? Like it goes into those things, right? So inclusive, happy, nurtured employees, they stay with the company long-term because they feel like the company is invested in them. They feel seen and valued and appreciated and heard, which is true to my definition and explanation of inclusion, right? That's what that is. So when people feel that way, they stay. It's not, you know, for me, again, with what I get to do day to day, I was about to say, you know, that's not rocket science. It can, though, be tough for people to understand that, but that's where I'm coming from as well. When I say, you know, we're improving the bottom line by actually retaining talent, because going out there, working with recruiters, working with, you know, different packages for, you know, trying to bring people into an organization, that's very costly, not to mention the time it takes to interview and recruit, right? So better to maintain and nurture the talent that you have. And the other portion is, you know, is around the generational diversity. That's often overlooked as well. You know, centennials born 96, 97 and after, they are looking at companies and organizations and saying, oh, what are you doing in the DE&I space? How do I know I have a place at this organization? You know, and it's not just centennials, right? But there are other people, right, who have an elevated level of consciousness in this space who are asking those questions of corporations as well. So again, and I think when you have built a DE&I space, a diversity, equity, inclusion space within any company, you start to see the fruits of your labor, right? You start to see higher retention, higher engagement, promotion of all dimensions of diversity, right? And so that's what we want. That's what I want.
I think you've been listening to our show because, you know, those are very strong themes in the conversation we have in our community, because our listeners have this innate hope that the work in the world that we all do brings hope and inspiration to others. There are those skeptics out there, which is good because they push us all to be better. I think you're, as our friends at the Uncertain Things podcast said about us, we're always looking for the angels of capitalism. And and Logan,
I did listen to that.
So I think you're one of those angels. So we thank you so much for coming down and visiting with us today. It has been a great pleasure.
Thank you so much, Don. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure for me as well. It really has.
You've been listening to What Does It Profit? Thanks to those who've gotten the word out about the show. For those of you who want to learn more about me and the backstory of the woman who trades in an investment banking career to be a business ethicist, check out the Australian podcast, If Only You Knew. Their episode with me was called Against All Odds. In this way, I invite you to get to know me better. Again, take a listen wherever you get your podcasts. In our next episode, we're going to switch things up a bit. We're going to talk about the idea of inclusion, but from a slightly different perspective. We're going to learn all about the economic structure called a co-op. Sure, you've likely heard of housing co-ops, maybe even a worker co-op or agricultural co-op, but do you know just how ubiquitous co-ops are? Next time, we'll talk everything co-op with Casey Fannin, Executive Vice President, and president of the National Cooperative Bank. In the meantime, follow us on social media to keep up with the show and to help us build the What Does It Profit community. Again, we're hanging out mostly on LinkedIn and Twitter at the moment. And please don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends about the show. You can meet our team and sign up for our weekly newsletter on our website, whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. What Does It Profit is written and hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. This episode was produced by Jordan Gaspare and edited by Switchinboard Studios. And the executive producer is me. Special thanks to our talented interns, Niels, Hannah, and Sean. Other team members and our long and illustrious group of friends and supporters can be found at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. Before I let you go, let me remind you to never stop asking yourself, what does it profit?